News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. If I'm Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on your Tuesday morning, which means it's Quinn Hillier time, quinnhillier.com and the Washington Examiner. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
We are great, and a lot to get into today with you, including, some Biden, I guess, missteps. We'll talk about how he has been portrayed in the media and kind of the response to some of these videos that don't shine Biden in too great of a light. But yesterday, Corinne Jean-Pierre had a statement on some of the videos. We'll get into that, plus this big G7 meeting and on the way in July, a NATO meeting as well. But let's start with Title IX, Quinn. And I know this is something you've been keeping your eye on as the latest news here from, I think it was an executive order that the Biden administration levied regarding Title IX. But a Kentucky federal judge yesterday issued a preliminary injunction against the Title IX overhaul. And this case includes not just Kentucky, but also Tennessee, Indiana, Ohio, Virginia, and West Virginia. Last week, Louisiana, a federal judge did the same thing in a similar ruling that included Mississippi, Montana, and Idaho. And the new rules, which were finalized by the Department of Education, set to go into effect August 1st, expand the definition of sex discrimination to include gender identity and pregnancy. But the agency did not issue any rules relating to transgender athletes. Among the changes include a prohibition on single-sex bathrooms and locker rooms and requirements that a school use pronouns based on a student's preferred gender identity. Now, we're looking at least 10 states pushing back on this, Quinn.
Yeah, and they should push back because, so it was the Biden appointees at the Education Department basically just added language. On their own, added language to Title IX. Title IX is supposed to protect women and girls against unequal treatment. And in doing so, part of the very point is to recognize that there are distinctions between men and women and to help protect girls and women against unfair treatment based on those distinctions. So what does the Biden administration do? It goes and it says sex, you shall not discriminate on the basis of sex, and they added or gender identity and then claim that gender identity is just a subset of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not their job. Their job is not to legislate. Their job is to issue rules that carry out the language that Congress put in there, not add language to it. And if you actually look back at the rest of the language in Title IX, it makes very clear that bathrooms and sort of private accommodations were not supposed to have men in them. There was specific language that said as much. And then some of the big supporters, some of the authors or co-authors of Title IX, liberal Democrats like Birch Bayh of Indiana, specifically said when they were doing it that nothing in here should be construed as to force any institution to accept men in women's private places. So it couldn't be clearer what the intent was, and yet Biden and his team go in and they do just the opposite, and now they're saying that you have to let cross-dressing or transgender, biological men into women's locker rooms, women's bathrooms, maybe even if you go on an overnight field trip to stay in the women's quarters, maybe in their double beds. I mean, this is crazy. This is sick. It's wrong, and it's legally wrong too. And so that's why it's so good that these states and some of the outside legal aid groups are helping fight against it.
You know, as I watch this play out, as so many of us have for the last 5 years, decade, it's still crazy to me that through the massive push by feminists for years to, you know, in their words, even the playing field for women, that in just a few years of this, I guess I'd call it, you know, phenomenon, this gender identity thing, that all of the years of work of these feminists, they're just letting them kind of throw it away in the name of gender equality.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely put my mind in a pretzel that all these feminists fought for all these years, and now they're saying, well, how about we let men use the women's locker rooms? How about we let men play and dominate in your sport?
Yeah, how about we let men win all the awards?
And somehow they got a lot of these feminists on their team.
On board.
Yeah, they're on board with it.
But not all of them, especially not all the top athletes. Martina Navratilova, one of the greatest, three or four greatest women tennis players of all time. Very outspoken liberal, lesbian, but has a lot of integrity. And she has been crusading against this sort of thing, saying it's absolutely absurd to put men into women's sports and women's locker rooms. Williams sisters, you know, Serena mm-hmm. and Venus, have not been as outspoken, but they have agreed with Martina Navratilova. It's people in their ivory tower who want to push this stuff. And again, let me say that Title IX's actual language, I quote, "Nothing contained herein shall be construed to prohibit educational institutions from maintaining separate living facilities for the different sexes." That's what Title IX says, and yet Biden is doing the opposite and saying that they do have to let biological men into women's spaces. It's legally wrong. It's ethically wrong. It's dangerous for the girls and the women, and it's got to be stopped.
We're not just talking about people who have transitioned from one gender to the other, but people who identify themselves, correct, Dalton?
Right.
That's people who say, you know what, I identify. I've had this feeling for so long, and now I'm going to be free to let everybody know. I identify as a woman, therefore, even without any biological or any kind of surgical change, I can do what I wish in any ladies' room in America.
Look, I have total empathy for any adult that wants to transition or whatever you call it. But there's a difference between letting them, you know, do what they want and letting them invade the spaces of women and especially girls. And it's not, a lot of these people, it's not just that they have a Y chromosome, they still have the male equipment.
Yeah.
And to have them in the girls' locker room, imagine a 13-year-old girl, and you've got this guy with guy equipment in the locker room changing right next to you. That's just got to be uncomfortable. It's not fair. It's not right. And in some cases, it's proved to be not safe.
Well, you talk about the ivory towers and such, and the University of Pennsylvania, a great example of that with the Leah Thomas thing. And then a year later, it comes out, a lot of these players are now, the swimmers are now speaking.
And they were incredibly uncomfortable.
They were... During that season, they were threatened by university officials. You don't make any noise about this at all, and you want to remain here at Penn, you're going to play by these rules. These are the rules.
Yeah.
So you had girls who were then seniors, kept quiet, and then when the season was over and they were free to talk, they've talked, and it was a terrible experience.
And that's, you know, nearly professional athletes with large platforms where people want to hear about them. If this stuff is going on with, like Quinn said, 12 and 13-year-olds who are being told by their schools to shut up and follow the law, that's a major problem. And Quinn, this seems like another straightforward example of executive overreach and, you know, something we just see over and over again, whether it's the new action taken by Biden today to shield about 500,000 from being deported because they're illegal, but they're married to American citizens, or we've seen it with student loans time and time again. I mean, it seems like there's another instance of overreach by the Biden administration every week.
Right, and their attitude is, look, we're going to issue either new rules or new executive orders so fast that the courts can't keep up with them. And, you know, it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall. We're going to see what sticks. And if something doesn't stick, then we're going to change a few words and say, oh, this is a new one, and we're going to try it again, even though it does the exact same thing. And then it either goes into effect for a while, or it forces critics to spend the money to go to court to get an injunction to block it. And eventually, some of this gets to a liberal judge and gets through, at least for a while. And they're just like, we don't care what the law actually is. We just want to have it our way, and we're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah, and then when a conservative court, or if it makes it to the Supreme Court, like so many we've seen, then the Democrats look at that as a built-in political win. Even if their efforts are overturned in the courts, they say, well, this is just a slanted court. It's time to stack the Supreme Court or get rid of Alito. They have their go-to moves, right?
They have their go-to moves. And speaking of Alito, I have to say, it's absolutely sickening. The New York Times literally seems to think that it is a dangerous thing for a Supreme Court justice at a table at a private event, when somebody, some enthusiastic person who he doesn't know is a fake, says to him, well, our society needs to get back to godliness, to politely say, well, yes, it does. To them, that is theocracy, and it's dangerous. All he's doing, he didn't say the government should start instituting, godliness.
Right.
Somebody else said the society needs to get back to godliness, and he said yes. The New York Times thinks there's something bad about that, and that should disqualify him for the court. That's how crazy left these people are.
Yeah,
it's just wrong.
It is sickening in a way, but for him to just simply have an opinion on where society is today, to have an opinion on, yeah, things are getting a little, I think we could probably use a little injection of religion in our society, not by law, like you were saying. But yeah, my opinion is, yeah, we're probably straying too far away. Look at some of the elements around us. I would agree with that. And then for that to get turned into upside down into now, you nearly want to just kick him off the court. It's incredible.
It's incredible. And then they blast his wife for flying the Appeal to Heaven pine tree flag that is also being flown at that very moment in the most liberal city in the country, San Francisco, flying it on their official city property. How can that be a dangerous flag? And meanwhile, I thought it was okay to fly whatever flag you want, according to the left, right?
Right, yeah, whatever.
Not if it's a flag that George Washington happened to fly. Oh, no, then that's dangerous.
Yeah, well, I do think a lot of America, I hope, is finally seeing through some of these headlines and terrible reporting. You know, the left still falling right in line, but I think a lot of independents may be finally seeing the light. Quinn, when we get back, there's been, of course, you had this G7 meeting last week, which followed up all the D-Day remembrances earlier this month. And then next month, you have a NATO summit. And I want to get into that and
also
this war in Ukraine
a little bit. You had Stoltenberg coming to the U.S. yesterday, coming to D.C.
He's racking up the frequent flyer miles, isn't he?
That's a big weekend for him. Quinn, we'll be right back with you in moments, okay?
Okay.
It is 8:20 on FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwick. More with Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com on the way. FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, Tuesday morning, means Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner at 8:24.
It is 8:24, and Quinn, would love to talk with you about just kind of where we stand, as seems obvious to most that we could potentially be on the precipice of another world war. Things are kind of hot, you know, around the globe, and whether it's the Russia-Ukraine war or now Israel and Hamas, you see Hezbollah lobbing bombs into Israel as well, and then U.S. continued to fight it out with the Houthi rebels in the Red Sea trying to clear those shipping lanes. So a lot going on. And we had D-Day, then we had this G7 meeting last week, a NATO summit coming up at the beginning of next month, but we don't seem to be any closer to bringing an end to the Russia-Ukraine war. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on where we stand right now with this war still ongoing in Ukraine.
Well, where we stand is that it's time for President Biden to fish or cut bait. And fish means stop putting restrictions on what Ukraine can do with the weapons we give them. Look, it's crazy to have a country that is purely on defense be given weapons and then said, but you cannot, and then told that you cannot use those weapons to knock out the facilities across the border that are sending missiles your way. So if the missiles are on the way, you can try to knock the missiles down, but you can't send your own ordnance onto the place that they're coming from to stop them in the first place. That's what Biden is doing. Ukraine has been doing really well ever since we restarted the flow of weapons. They've been doing really well grinding Russia's advance to a halt. About a week ago, Russia had its worst two-day casualty numbers in the entire history of this over two-year-old war. Ukraine can fight if you give them the weapons. Let's let them finish the job.
I read an article over the weekend and talked to Dalton about this yesterday, where it was asserted that Russia has got all the cards and that the war ends when Russia pulls out. Ukraine is fighting for their life. They're fighting for Ukraine. They're not going to stop fighting. Russia really is the only player in this conflict with the opportunity to end the war.
Exactly.
So, you know, Ukraine is going to fight to the end. And Russia at some point can cut their losses, or they can try to save face somehow, or they can be some sort of a peace agreement. But from what we read from over the weekend, we're a long way from that.
Well, yeah, although I've got to say, since you mentioned the G7 meeting, the G7 leaders put out a very strong condemnation of China for supplying Russia's offensive military bases. And it says they will sanction Chinese entities, businesses, etc., that are doing so. This is a good step because, really, just as Ukraine wouldn't be making it without Western aid, Russia could not be doing what it's doing without Chinese support for their offensive, aggressive maneuvers. And so I think it's absolutely right for the G7 leaders to crack down on those Chinese entities. And, you know, I don't see China backing off, but if China finally says, you know what, we're wasting a lot of our own money and this isn't really in our best interest, then Russia suddenly has its military lifeline pulled, and that could force Putin to the negotiating table.
Right.
Well, you know, and there is another option, and I know it's not popular with a lot of people, and you get called a Russian sympathizer for even, you know, acknowledging that it's been put on the table, but there is the opportunity at some point to make a peace deal, right? And I know a lot of Americans, Biden has made clear that he doesn't plan on doing so or even really being in contact with Putin or the Russian government until Russia is completely out of Ukraine. And Quinn, I just don't see Russia doing that at all. I don't see them leaving what they've already annexed.
Well, except that they really haven't annexed it. They haven't annexed much. And if we get China to stop to pull their lifeline, you can go back to the status quo ante, meaning Russia keeps its ill-gotten gains in Crimea from 2014, but backs up, you know, gives up, say they give up 90% of the little bit of Ukrainian territory that they've taken in the last 2 years. And, you know, you give them a fig leaf of keeping 10% of it, and you tell Putin, sorry, buddy, that's all you're getting, because Putin is losing men at an unbelievably high rate, and at some point he can't afford that.
Quinn, if people want to read your stuff, what should they do?
they can subscribe at QuinnHillier.com, or they can Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner and get most of my stuff. Also, go read my book, The Accidental Prophet. It's a fun novel.
You find it at Amazon, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com.
And coming back, we'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. Blighted properties in Mobile. It's been a big talker this morning. We'll talk about it on the way.
Dan Brennan, Dalton, splash pad or wig. FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings, 834. One of our three big things was a story from Ashford Red about the fight against blight. The interviewed Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson. I remember when that program came into being. It was 2016, I believe. It was Bloomberg. Bloomberg did a number of things in this city for a couple of years.
What was that? It was kind of like a contractual thing almost.
Yeah, and among the grants they gave Mobile, that was to start this now nationally recognized system. I guess it is because it's being duplicated in other cities across the country. So the mayor was talking about the fact that it's like a blight report card. You have people driving around the city and they notice homes at this address or that address. They write it down. They write down the things.
So it's kind of objective, but they have standards.
Right. They have some standards there. They write it down and they figure out, does it meet our standards? And then, of course, it's between $1,800 and $5,000 to demolish the building. Stimson also said that, if you have one of these, like, you've got some neighborhoods that are a little hit and miss. You have a nice property next to one that is not as nice or actually blighted, and how that can really affect the property value of the other homes on the block.
Neighborhood, yeah.
25% was the number that Mayor Stimson talked about. So anyway, it's interesting because I know that they've had, numbers-wise, some success with this. In fact, 1,731 blighted homes in 2017, 777 in 2023, according to the mayor. Now, the other thing is, you're taking care of some blighted homes. I would think during this time, some new ones become blighted as well. You know,
right.
If you started in the year 2016 with 1,731, that number may have changed going forward. So anyway, we're getting some pushback or alarms on the text line about all this.
Yeah, a lot of people commenting on this, of course, because, well, a lot of you live near or drive by blighted properties. And Hal, who was texting in about this, single issue, probably more than I've seen Hal text about any other issues. I knew he'd be showing up today in the text line, and he did. He said, "This blight survey is a giant lie. Here on DIP, we have more blight than ever, more junk cars, more houses surrounded by junk, more litter, more abandoned houses, and more uncut lawns. Not to mention our calls to 311 do nothing. What a joke. Just look around." Then Hal sent a picture of a home that, can't see too. It does look like there's just junk piled all the way. Like they could use a call to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Image that Hal sent. He said, "This is what I have to look at every day." And then he quoted our former sheriff Sam Cochran from 2021. I need to go back and find this. It was in Midday Mobile, so I need to go back and listen to this in context. But he said he quotes the sheriff as saying, "Mobile is a dying, decaying city." And then Hal says, "The problem with the blight survey is who generated the numbers. The very inspectors who routinely abate legitimate complaints about blight are generating these numbers to make themselves look better. CJ and Sandy are aware of this, but since city employees are a huge voting block, they look the other way." So a lot from Hal this morning on that particular subject. You have Mike who says, "Blighted properties, Paul Prine had crime down in the city of Mobile for the last 3 years, and now Stimson is deflecting to blighted properties. Makes someone want to scratch his head." Are you talking about scratching your own head, Mike, or scratching the mayor's head?
Well, look, as far as him scratching my head, that's out. Hands off.
So we'll get to some more of these texts about blight. But I don't know if it's, everything doesn't have to be a conspiracy. Like, is there a reason why this story is coming out now? If anything, I would say it's the recent
Lanyap articles,
which have been one just about every week, or at least they were running for a couple weeks, where Rob Hulbert was talking about how to make downtown a place that would bring in more visitors. And he mentioned some of the blighted properties, some of the buildings that have just been left to kind of deteriorate over the years in downtown Mobile, whether they're blighted properties or not. That was kind of the focus of his screed on how to fix downtown. And you had Quinn Hillier jump in, and he was giving his own take on things as well. So that would be, for me, I would think that's why maybe this story's coming out now, more to do with that than deflecting from the investigations and things that are going on.
Yeah, the investigation's going to go on regardless, right? Also, who was it that just told me that they had been in downtown Pensacola and what a great time they had and what a aesthetically pleasing place that is, as opposed to Mobile? It's a little more rough around the edges, right? And I think also when you live somewhere for a long time, when you are, it is what it is, kind of, in your own mind. You don't notice those abandoned buildings or unused buildings or underused buildings in downtown Mobile as much as maybe I would if I was less familiar with downtown Mobile. But being very familiar with downtown Mobile, it doesn't hit me the same way. Mm-hmm. But you have a visitor from another city coming to town, and they're like, what's up with all this? You're downtown.
Right.
And that will happen from time to time.
Yeah, but, you know, if you take the statistics at face value, this is good news, right? If the number of blighted properties is down by almost 1,000 over 4 years, mm-hmm. then that would be great news. I guess where exactly is most of this work happening? Because if you listen to Hal and
not
some
his
other,
neighborhood,
not DIP and not other areas, and you wonder if... I mean, we've talked so much about moving folks out of Section 8 housing, mm-hmm. and that's been happening for years now, and the demolishment of some of these properties, and whether that took out a large chunk of maybe the blighted properties, I'm not exactly sure, but clearly a lot of you with your own take. Chris says, well, this is Foley. He said, you have to see what I live next door to in Foley. The man has... piles of stumps. He has laid out black cloth all over his property so he doesn't have to cut grass. Piles of stumps. He's laid out black cloth all over his property so he doesn't have to cut grass. There are 6 or 7 buildings that are unsecured storage buildings right in front of the park in downtown Foley. It is unacceptable. So, you know, clearly all over people have this issue, but specific to Mobile, I know blighted properties has been a pretty major discussion.
Well, he's trying to make it like, look, it's just a tarp, like Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
You know, I want to protect. And I showed you we were watching a video online last week, I guess it was, about Light of the Village, mm-hmm. in Alabama Village. And that is an epicenter. I mean, people cannot believe their own eyes when they visit Light of the Village, not Light of the Village itself, but the neighborhood that surrounds it. It's incredible blight there, just like off the charts.
Yeah,
and there's other areas too of North Mobile and into Pritchard where you have this problem. Also, I think it is kind of, you know, I don't know. It seems to me some work has been done recently on Michigan Avenue. When you look at Michigan Avenue, if you take it in from the new airport into Midtown, I think it ends right there at government. It's a major thoroughfare. I mean, it's at one time was a kind of a big stately boulevard.
Yeah.
You don't think of it that way now, but it was, with big homes and everything like that. I think something is being done to some of those. I knew a black friend of mine from years back. We just haven't reconnected. His name or nickname was Sarge, and Sarge, I know, was working on some of the bigger, I guess you could also almost say mansions. They were big homes. You see them on government. They were also and are on Michigan Avenue as well.
And aged, right?
Yes, right. So you have some work. I guess I bring that up because that's a major play. A lot of traffic up and down that. So a lot of eyes on the property. So it's not going to be missed on somebody.
Right.
Like, it's pretty obvious. Like, look at that.
It's not at the end of some cul-de-sac dead end. Right?
Exactly. So maybe places like that, is where the administration is focusing on, because it's the area most people, more people would see.
Let's do a quick read through some of these texts on a number of different subjects. Tony Ann says, litter is a problem and everyone can help improve this.
True.
Don't do it. I think that is, I don't know if you would call it my anger irrational, but that is one thing that just gets me anytime. Yeah. I saw it right out here in front of our studio. I guess it's been months, but feels like yesterday I was so angry about it. And just you pull up to the stop sign here, and I saw somebody empty their entire floorboard of all the trash that they had. And to immediately see it fly away once they put it out on the just right here, it was Sprite cans and empty bags of chips. And just,
I mean, that
made me want to fishtail them, I'll be honest.
You know, If you treat garbage like that, you are garbage. Mm. I was right behind somebody on the service road, and when you're closing in on getting closer to the station if you're coming east from like Mont Lamar, and they got right to where the creek is underneath us, Slava Creek, I guess, and they thought that was a good place to
throw it on out.
Yeah.
Jeez, just what goes through their heads?
Just so irritating.
Jason says, Sandy... Mayor he's talking about here. Sandy lost all respect when he caved to the bogus BLM movement and removed the Admiral Sims statue. Now he's chosen to put up statues of ballplayers. Lunacy. When will someone demand he return the Sims statue to its rightful place? Texter here says, this country is going to go broke if we keep sending money to Ukraine. Rebecca says, good morning, guys. Apologies if you've already commented on this, but I would like to hear your thoughts on Dr. Phil's interview with President Trump. I played the preview of that, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Not on the air, but we were sitting in our office last week. I never made it around to watching the entire interview. So, Rebecca, I'll have to watch that one. I know Trump did another one with Jake Paul last week,
the
social media star.
Yeah, and I've only heard clips of that. So I know that Dr. Phil himself, now he is now a podcaster, and he is, I guess, who isn't, right? He is very, very right-wing, very conservative, and I don't know that he was able to ever express that on his show. Does he still have a show, or has it been
Yeah, I think he still has a show,
okay.
And, I mean, who could ever cancel that show, right? There's been a number of historical moments in America that have happened on the Dr. Phil show, so that would be like getting rid of, 60 Minutes. But how about Phil for VP? Dr. Phil for VP.
Well, who was the
we had Dr. Oz that he endorsed in Pennsylvania.
He didn't work out so well.
So Trump has dropped Oz and picked up Phil. That's where we are now. Mr. Plott says, can we believe any audio recordings anymore with the prevalence of AI? As I understand, it only takes a few seconds of someone's voice recording to make them say anything you want. And you're referring to what we were talking about with the Justice Alito and the secret recording at a event that he was in attendance. You had this left-wing operative who, that person worked directly for NPR or something like that, but acts like she's on Team Alito and is actually recording him secretly, and then they mine that for whatever dings they can get in on the Supreme Court justice. And in this case, it was him saying that America needs to return to godliness. But... I was thinking about that when you're talking about audio recordings with no video. I do think you have to take those with huge grains of salt, right?
Especially now, if it's my voice and it's very embarrassing.
Well, you also, of course, one major audio recording we're discussing is this Biden interview with Special Counsel Robert Hur.
Yes.
And the administration's excuse for not releasing that is saying that it would be too easy to doctor it. Well, it's like if you actually, the Biden administration, release the video directly to media, there's no way that can be misconstrued,
right?
Because it would be coming directly from you.
And
if anything, we would need to be worried that you doctored it to make Biden sound better.
Yeah.
But listen to this, as deep fakes, and we talked about this some yesterday, and that was with the guy who took the fake audio of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
Which was completely obvious.
Yes.
Said, hey, it's Martin Luther King Jr. I'm back from the dead, and I endorse this Ohio Republican. Well, yesterday, Corinne Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, was asked about all these videos of Biden, whether it was at D-Day, the G7 summit, or his big Hollywood money
fundraiser
over the weekend where it looked like Obama kind of had to lead him off stage. And she comes up with a new term here, not deep fakes, but cheap fakes. Here's Corinne Jean-Pierre, if I can play this audio. Listen.
There used to be a sort of rash of videos that have been edited to make the president appear especially frail or mentally confused. I'm wondering if the White House is especially worried about the fact that this appears to be a pattern that we're seeing more of.
Yeah, and I think you all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith. And some of your news organization have been very clear, have stressed that these right wing critics of the president have a credibility problem because of the fact checkers have repeatedly caught them pushing misinformation, disinformation, and so we see this, and this is something coming from your part of the world, calling them cheap fakes and misinformation.
Okay, so she's saying she didn't come up with the term cheap fakes, but she's even referencing videos that are obviously, you know, taken at the time of the event, not being doctored.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, look, the president doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what he's saying. But instead of saying this is a deep fake video, which is what everyone, these are cheap fakes. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, oh, yeah, they're not putting themselves at risk of being called a liar and saying, oh, that's a deep fake video. And someone goes, no, actually, it's not. That's the video, the way it was taken. So they're saying cheap fakes.
And what is exactly in her definition of cheap fakes means exactly what?
Right.
What does that mean? How is it not authentic?
There, you will not get a definition from her of what exactly is a cheap fake video. It's just a term they can throw out there so that, you know, half of America says, oh, well, then that must have been an edited video
right.
of Biden.
Right.
No. And that was the real video. They're just going to label it all as a fake, even if it isn't really a fake. Yeah. But she did catch some flack from that yesterday, and I think it's a real problem. I wanted to ask Quinn about this, too. We kind of ran out of time, but I still think there's a chance, especially after this debate at the end of the month, that they move on from Biden at the top of the ticket.
Wow. All right. 851 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. All righty. Flash pad enthusiast Dalton Org has got a traffic update for us all.
Yeah, thank you on the text line. A few of you texting in, but Cheesewagon says crash northbound I-65 just north of the I-10 interchange, right shoulder block. So that might be affecting traffic on 10 as well. But the crash is northbound 65 just north of I-10, right shoulder blocked. And a lot of people weighing in on the blighted properties discussion. Martin says here in Silver Hill on Highway 104 on both ends of town, we have despicable properties, been that way for years.
Wow.
You know, one of our three big things this morning is Kansas suing Pfizer for the COVID-19 vaccine. This is something that Texas did last year. That case is pending. Kansas jumped in now and is saying that Pfizer marketed their vaccine shot as safe, even though they knew the vaccine was connected to serious adverse events. And, you know, as I was reading this, I was thinking, well, I've been told for years that you can't sue vaccine makers. And, you know, the first thing that people bring up was during Reagan and 1986 when a law was passed. What was that one called? It was the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act mm-hmm. of 1986, yeah. which
taking said, the makers of those childhood vaccines that everyone is supposed to get, right?
Right, and provide them civil immunity. And, you know, the argument you get is, well, if you don't provide these pharmaceutical companies with immunity, then they will just stop making the product or stop attempting to make the product. Kind of like the discussion we heard with IVF, where, okay, if you're going to say we can get sued for an IVF gone wrong, then we're just not going to do IVF.
It's not worth it,
yeah,
right.
We saw that. But apparently they can be sued. And this PrEP Act, which it's actually amazing. I went down this rabbit hole yesterday as I was kind of searching for whether these companies can be sued or not. And a story came up from CNBC December of 2020, okay? So yep. Trump is still in office.
He's trying to get a vaccine out there.
And I think this is right around when they finally made the vaccines available, right? So they waited until the election was over and then Pfizer, Moderna, J&J started pushing the vaccines. Theory was that they didn't want Trump to get that win before the November election.
Yeah, I remember that.
But at the time, it was still Trump's vaccine. So you had Kamala Harris, you had all these Democrats going out there and saying they weren't going to get vaccinated and saying things like, I don't know, do you trust this government to push out a vaccine that quickly? And then, of course, we all know what happened. Once Biden took office, that the Democrats became the party of don't ask, you're going to get the vaccine whether you like it or not.
So did our Republican governor.
So did Kay Ivey. A lot of people did.
Look back at it in the summer of 2021. She was saying things like that, too.
So in this CNBC article, the information I was looking for, the PrEP Act, which was a 2005 law, but it was reissued by the HHS in, I think, March of 21. Well, they said that protection to companies that make or distribute critical medical supplies, it's protection unless there's willful misconduct by the company, which is what Kansas and Texas are claiming here.
Right.
But also, the protection only lasts until October 1st of this year. So I'm not sure how that 1986 law plays into it, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. But as far as the PrEP Act, they're saying that Pfizer and Moderna and all these can be sued at the end of this year.
Time's up.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But if you go back, and I'll retweet this, but CNBC singing a completely different tune in 2020 to what we would see over the next 3 or 4 years, where they're very skeptical of these vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying you can't sue the FDA for authorizing. They're looking for people to sue in this lawsuit because this is the very bad Trump vaccine.
Yeah.
Just to see how things changed within months on these exact same websites, where they called you a conspiracy theorist if you had any questions. It's wild to go back and look at some of that.
Biden got the jab on TV. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It is 8:59. The Jeff Poore Show is on the way next on FM Talk 106.5.